This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Coming up, as graduates listen to commencement speeches all across the state and country, we're going to consider what makes a great commencement speech.
And what makes a bad one or a funny one. And we'll ask you about your least favorite or your favorite commencement speeches.
But first, all this week, WBUR has been looking at teachers and teaching. And we've been exploring what makes a great teacher. Among the big questions, are the skills required to be a great teacher innate?
Or can you teach good teaching? Doug Lamov says you can.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, let's not deny that there's such a thing as natural talent, and some people have great intuition for it and can often get by on that intuition. But there's no doubt in my mind that it's a learnable profession, that it's a series of concrete things that great teachers do over and over again that can be acquired through practice. And to me, that's really exciting, because it means that anyone can be a great teacher if they're willing to put in the work.
Doug Lamov is the founder of Uncommon Schools, a network of charter schools that includes Roxbury Prep in Boston. He spent years observing great teachers, trying to figure out what they do and how they do it.
And he put his findings into a book that he calls Teach Like a Champion, 49 Techniques That Put Students on the Path to College. Lamov is also a former teacher. He told us his research began with his own challenges in the classroom.
I discovered that I had a lot of heart, and but not a lot of skill. You know, my first couple years teaching was actually in Boston. It was at a school called the Academy of the Pacific Rim. I really wanted the best for my kids. I believed in them. I had high expectations, but I sometimes lost the battle in the mundane moments, and I couldn't get them to listen in the way that I wanted to. And there was a watershed moment for me when a more experienced teacher said, you know, try standing still when you give the kids directions. When you're walking around while you're giving directions, it makes it sound like your directions are an afterthought. Lo and behold, it worked.
Now, Doug, you designed something called the taxonomy of teaching techniques. What is that? I gather it's related to what you were just describing there.
Yeah, it's really just taxonomy is a fancy word for a set of field notes. I just went out and I found the best teachers that I could, teachers who had high-poverty kids who overcame adversity, sometimes just to be in the classroom, but still delivered results, still put those kids on the path to college. And I just started to take notes on what differentiated them from the merely good. And I tried to break it down into concrete, actionable things that you could do and say on Monday morning to make a difference in your classroom.
So I want to play just two or three examples, and these come right from your website. In this first example, we hear a third grade teacher. Her name is Hannah Loftus. She's at the Leadership Prep School in New York. And this is an example of using cold calling, just calling on kids when they're not necessarily expecting it. And we're going to hear her voice, and we're going to hear a sort of narrator talking about it, which I guess is your voice, Doug. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, well, let's listen to this, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
Let's go. Word one, what word, Cartier?
Monday.
Two, what word, Tatiana?
Monday.
Three, what word, Dion?
Hannah's kids now know they have to be listening carefully and ready at any time. They're engaged even before they get called on.
Four, Jameer. Seven, what word, Marcellus? Very good. Let's go top down.
The second crucial thing about Hannah's cold calling is that she's positive. Cold calls shouldn't be a gotcha. Not, what did I just say, Sarah? But a real question. But notice Hannah's smile.
Three, what word, Dion?
Yesterday.
Four, what word, Dion?
Mysterious.
Mysterious. Five, what word, Janai?
That smile is a home run. The message is, we're in this together. I'm going to challenge you, but I'm happy when you succeed, and we can even have a little fun along the way.
So, Doug, that shows, I guess, how to hold students accountable for listening. How important is this kind of skill that Hannah's displaying there?
Yeah, it's funny that you started with cold call. To me, it's arguably the single most important technique in the book. Cold call is defined as calling on kids regardless of whether they raise their hands. And in most classrooms, you know, I think we assume that I can call on the kids whose hands are raised, but not on the other kids. And so the first reason why this is really critical is because a teacher has to check for understanding. There's a difference between whether I taught it and whether they learned it. And one of the things that we see in great teachers is they're obsessed with finding out whether students actually mastered what they told them. Second reason why cold calling is so important is it for pacing reasons. If you made an audio tape of a typical teacher's classroom, you might hear something like this. Who'd like to answer question number one? Pause. Like to hear from the boys in the back? Still no hands. Mm-hmm. May I remind you that you're getting a participation grade here? So this teacher has just wasted 10 seconds pleading for students to raise their hands. And if you multiply that times 100 questions, you know, a week times, 40 weeks of school, you know, that's an incredible amount of wasted time. And then the third reason for cold calling is, yes, it creates a culture of engagement and accountability, which is students will be engaged and be prepared to participate because they can't sort of choose not to be involved.
Okay, let's play another quick example. This is Jesse Rector. He's a teacher at the North Star Academy in Newark. All his students are standing. He's teaching math. He's cold calling on them. And he's asking some really tough questions. Let's listen just for about 30 seconds.
I am an isosceles triangle, with two angles that measure 3x each. What is the measure of my third angle, Anaya? 180 degrees minus 6x. Excellent, 180 degrees minus 6x. The square root of 400 is what, Frank? No, the square root of 400 is not 100. Help him out.
20.
That's right, it's 20. Tell him why.
Because if you multiply 20 by 20, you'll get 400.
Excellent. Let's see.
Rigor is important. I mean, those aren't easy questions. I guess those, what, were 8th or 9th graders, something like that?
They were actually 7th graders.
7th graders.
So when I show this video to groups of adults and I ask the room of adults how many people could get that right, and, you know, usually there are only a handful of tentative hands going up, but his kids nail it. You know, they rise to the expectations that he holds for them.
Mm. Well, obviously, knowing the material is important, but what you're describing here is a really almost like a sort of stagecraft. I mean, it's teaching as performance art in a sense. Is that fair, or am I overstating that?
Well, I think that it is, and I think the interesting thing about you're calling it performance craft. I mean, I think all of us who've been teachers know this, that you know, one of the hard parts about teaching is you're on stage 3 times a day or 5 times a day, and that can be tiring and challenging. And every other performance profession that I know, professional athletes, performance artists, musicians, and actors, what do? To prepare? They practice. And yet, if you ask the typical teacher in a typical school how often they practice what they do in the game before they go into the game and do it, they might look at you funny. They call it professional development, not practice. And one thing that I think you see at great schools like Roxbury Prep is that teachers actually practice. They get together and they practice doing things like cold calling so that when it comes time to do it in the game, it's natural and comfortable.
Doug, one last example that I want to play, and I think this is my favorite. This is Rob Zimmerly at the True North Rochester Prep School, and here he is organizing his students, urging them to put away their things, sit up, pay attention, and basically get ready to learn. Let's listen.
Show me your slant. Show me your... Thank you. Thank you, Miss Everlasting. I like it.
Thank you. That's an acknowledgement. Praise would have been, "That's so great, you're ready when I asked." If he'd used that, he would have sounded surprised that kids did it.
He's ready. 5, 4, 3. She's ready.
More acknowledgement. Real and authentic. He's ready. She's ready. It builds momentum. Ready for what? And draws kids' attention to the normalcy of compliance. Everyone around them is doing it.
0. All pencils down. Who wants it? Do you want it? Can you show me?
Oh, and a little inspiration never hurts.
I can bring it to you, but I can't give it to you. You got to reach for it. If they were free at Toys R Us, you'd reach. You'd step. I'm giving you the same kind of gift, just not wrapped up. Gift of knowledge.
I love that. The gift of knowledge. A little inspiration never hurts, indeed. What can you say about Rob Zimmerly, Doug?
That's a beautiful clip. And Bob has an unfair advantage over most of us because he's actually been a preacher and gets his practice on Sundays. So, you know, but I think there is a connection, you know,
sure.
a exhortation is part of the job.
Yeah.
But just as inspirational to me is that beautiful moment. Are the little moments sprinkled in where he, you know, he just acknowledges kids for doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is something that's so easy to forget. You know, I have a friend who's got 4 kids in some pretty tough city schools near where I live. And they're good kids, and he says they come home every night and they say, "Daddy, no one notices us. No one. We're always trying to do the right thing, and no one ever points us out." You know, the more you narrate it, the more you bring it into being. Mm-hmm. And if I talk over and over again about the fact that Anthony's ready to go, and here's Stuart's online, and here comes Susan, and she's ready to learn, then I make it seem like the normal state of being in class is everyone is attentive to what the teacher's talking about, and everyone is ready to learn.
Is this kind of thing being taught in the Ed schools, for example?
You can see this as glass half full or glass half empty. It's the greatest opportunity or the saddest part for me. I mean, I just think about how many great teachers there are out there right now as we're speaking this morning who are changing the world in their classrooms. We certainly aren't rushing to study them. And the things that people learn in schools of education for the most part are developed by theorists who don't see the classroom very often. The solutions to teaching problems exists in the hearts and minds and practices of actual teachers who are out on the front line doing it right now. And it's our job as a profession to go out and study those people who are truly effective and understand what they do so we can take what they've done and use it to make the lives of kids better.
Well, Doug Lamov, thank you so much for talking to us. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Doug Lamov is founder of Uncommon Schools and the author of Teach Like a Champion, 49 Techniques That Put Students on the Path to College. You can see some of his examples of great teachers at work on our website, radioboston.org.
When we come back, Pulitzer Prize winner Geraldine Brooks and the discovery she made after moving to Martha's Vineyard.
And right near where we were then living was a notation saying it was the birthplace of Caleb, the first Native American graduate of Harvard. And I thought, cool, maybe I'll see him at the farmer's market.
Well, maybe if she had a time machine. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.